Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up a Clip today. I am here with my fellow conservative, or actually, I don't know if it's a fellow conservative as a humanist. Is that the right term? Miss Annette Ross. And we're going to crank out the heat to level 11. There is no 10 in this room. Today, we're going to be chasing an unfiltered truth that's going to make your blood boil, people. How Uncle Sam poked the bear and acted shocked when it bit back. We're going to tear the lid off the Ukraine-Russia mess. To be honest, I don't mean to sound so crude, but it's literally a streaming pile of lies. Ooh, I'm glad I read my notes. I was thinking something else. And it's been buried by the Obama-Biden regime and their media lapdogs. So we're going to talk about Jeffrey Sachs. He is Colombia's economic big shot. Annette, I mean, I'd heard of him and I'd forgotten about this great video he did, and Annette turned us on to it. And I said, he's explaining this better than anyone we could. And I said, I wanted to do a clip on it because you should know what he said and understand the ramifications of what's happening. Yeah. And I don't really agree with him a lot. I view him as an intellectual progressive who hasn't lived in the real world, but that's my personal take. He comes across as a very nice guy, comes across as somebody who you could talk to, you could have a cup of coffee, and you could have a nice civil debate. And when I listened to him on the Ukraine issue, I was like, oh my God, that's me. That's me in there. That's me there. Those words coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And my point is, he's got the historical receipts, and he can prove how the West provoked Putin.
Yeah. You know,
we're not fans of Russia. Let's get that straight. Meaning, but in this case, it is a good old USA. And for you people who go and believe that shit don't happen here, you need to look in the mirror. there's. I don't want to say a rich history. There's a lot of history. My country was created through imperial diplomacy. So we're not Putin fanboys. We're just truth hunters. We're going to talk about from NATO's broken 1990 pledge to the 99 Serbia bombing and the 2014 Ukraine coup. And Sachs says that's when we cornered Russia until they snapped. You know, I'm not going to say I swallow all his stuff, but on this one, he hits the bullseye. Then we're going to close it out with a quick breakdown and reality check on the Oval Office blow up between Zelensky, Trump, and J.D. Vance. And Victor Davis Hanson and David Sachs weigh in. No, we don't know them. No, we didn't talk to them. They just put out some great points that my issue is the working class. Sometimes I look at these people and what they write, I'm like, that's what I'm trying to say. And David Sachs, not to be confused with Jeffrey Sachs. Spelling's different, the name is different, but they're two Sachs. And Victor Davis Hanson had some great points, and I combined them both, or about 20 points. I combined them, took out the redundancy, and formulated them into one nice flowing topic for us at the end. So before we go on, do not forget to bookmark grumbliesmedia.com and check out our work at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, e Pandora. Under what handle, Annette?
Under what? Grumbly's what?
Grumbly's Media. Under the handle, Grumbly's Media.
See, when you catch me off guard, I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm thinking about Jeffrey Sachs. I have Jeffrey Sachs on the brain today.
Okay, so when you first showed us this video, there's a video of Jeffrey Sachs. We're going to talk about all this to the audience. But when you first showed me it lit me up because I'm like, I just forgot it. It was kind of like somebody, it's kind of like that Batman Robin meme. Boom, here you go, you idiot. Look at this.
Yeah. And
so I wanted to talk about it. Were you shocked in the sense, hey, we still need to keep talking about it? Or did you completely understand why?
No, I did. I think he connects the dots. And I think that I'm a fan of his, no doubt about it. I know what you're saying about where he's coming from being progressive. He was a regular for a long time on Morning Joe when I used to watch Morning Joe. But even then, I would say, wow, he's making a really good point. Just like I can watch Bill Maher's show and say, okay, he's making a good point. I think you've got to be able to do that when you're listening to both sides. And you and I, if we're going to be good conservatives, we've got to be able to sharpen up our arguments and know why we're saying what we're saying and actually have something to back it up. So I think Jeffrey Sachs is always a voice of reason. I took a class that he led. It was online. It's really interesting. He's extremely thoughtful. And when I saw a couple of his videos on this particular conflict, you know, conversations that he was having, interviews, I guess you could say, I was like, wow, I've got to send this to William, because he's really making strong points. As he says, he knows these people. In many of the cases, he knows a lot of them. He is not a political appointee. He's not in political office, but they bring him in sometimes to establish a currency, to help them with economics. I think he said that Ukraine has lost their economy's down 35% since the war.
Right.
I mean, so he's an economist really at the heart, I think, and he makes a really good point about why we are where we are today.
Well, for the audience, Jeffrey Sachs is an American economist and public policy expert. Means he's one of those, they call him wonk. You know, these intellectuals that talks policy, studies policies, and somebody like Jeffrey Sachs, more than likely has been involved in creating policy for the government in certain cases. He was born in 1954. He serves as a university professor at Columbia University and the director of its Center for Sustainable Development. He's renowned for his work on sustainable development and global economics, and he's been a prominent critic of U.S. foreign policy, specifically arguing that NATO expansion provoked Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And he's articulated this. That's the thing about it. That's the best word. He articulates it to where a five-year-old not only understands it, is hanging to listen to his
compelling
next word.
Yes.
So he's talked about this in numerous speeches. And when I was searching, I found yours. I found the one I had heard. Then I found another one.
Yeah.
And he has various – he's given this talk in various speeches, written various articles, and made media appearances. So, again, if you're a conservative, you hear he's on Morning Joe a lot, you can tell he probably leans progressive. But as Annette said, you have to listen to the story. So what I'm trying to say is I can listen to Jeffrey Sachs and I can blow him off China. Real quick, I completely disagree, but I'll listen to him. But you're always going to be able to find like a Ukraine. So it does pay to listen to. That's how I discovered Victor David Hansen. I don't always agree with Victor David Hansen. I think sometimes you have to have friends that are more outside the ivory tower. And Victor David Hansen's, his friends are all ivory tower friends. But because of his background, his pedigree, coming from a farmland, he's got his hands dirty. He's lived that working class life, even though his parents, you know, you're Ivy League bound, you know. So he's able to make that transition. So, and I didn't fall in love with him, but it's like, hey, I get this guy. But I disagree with him quite a bit at times too. I'm like, bro, get out of Tucker's house. Come on now. Yeah. I'm being sarcastic there. But the point is there's always something of value to listen to somebody who's willing to talk in a civil matter. So what is the ugly truth of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the root cause? Well, Annette, look, as we know, in 1990, there was the NATO pledge.
Yep.
It was the reunification.
You have to go eastward. Yep. Go ahead.
Yep. James Baker. See, this is where y'all need to know history. This is, I guarantee you, Annette, they're not teaching this part of history in high school anymore.
No.
And I was not taught that. We were living it. We saw it happen in our news, and I was out of school by then. But during the German reunification talks, the U.S. Secretary of State, James Baker, he assured Gorbachev on February 9th, 1990, that NATO would not expand eastward if the Soviets allowed a united Germany in NATO. We allowed a united Germany in NATO. And how do we know this? Through declassified documents. Then, that wasn't it. And going back to World War II in Yalta, the big secret meeting between Roosevelt and Stalin, when I first discovered this meeting was in the movie. I read about it in the history books.
Right.
You know, and it was understood, while not wholly stated, that this pledge or this was an assumed pledge, that Stalin's interpretation of Yalta and Potsdam as recognizing a Soviet defensive buffer with expected non-interference, both militarily and politically. And I apologize. It was also understood, while not wholly stated in that meeting with Baker and Rush here, that this pledge signaled a broader restraint on NATO's eastward push. So for the audience, Annette, what are we saying here that happened?
Well, we're saying that we made a promise because Russia, sort of like we didn't want Cuba in the Cuban Missile Crisis, right? so close to the United States. They're not comfortable with us being, and NATO being brushed up right against them. So we made a promise that we would be, we wouldn't get that close, is basically what it boils down to. Because right. that was a zone that they weren't comfortable with. They did not want NATO encroaching upon their border.
Exactly. And we broke that promise.
We wouldn't want it either. And to be fair, and Jeffrey Sachs says this a lot, we wouldn't want it either. And when Cuba, for the Cuban.
Oh, no, we're going to talk about that. I don't want to get this in editors. But you are absolutely right. And what Annette was referring about, not that we don't want Cuba in our backyard, they're an island, we're stuck with them. She was talking about the Russian deployment there. And
right,
that's old history. And I really wonder if they're teaching that, but we'll talk about that here in a few.
It was quite that simple. We were not going to expand eastward. And that was like a comfort zone for Russia.
That's
they were
right.
They were okay with that.
And they broke this.
We
commitment.
Did.
Yes, we broke it starting in 1999 with Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic joining NATO. And that was followed by the Baltic states in 2004 and others. We were creeping through Russian borders. Now, the only positive in that is that we're still far from Russia in many ways. So
Correct.
We kind of like, okay, it's kind of like that parent. I'm telling you, I'm warning you, you know. And then the 1999 Belgrade bombing.
Turn your phone off, but if you keep it on, let's take it away. You know,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
No, yeah. So go ahead. The Belgrade. So
in 1999 in Belgrade, NATO bombed Yugoslavia for 78 days. There was no UN approval here. They targeted Serbia, a Russian ally. So technically, this was illegal, what we were doing.
Yeah.
And they, in essence, they to force Kosovo's separation. Russia condemned it as illegal. The U.S. justified it as humanitarian. Before we go on, see, this is what bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about humanitarian and the human rights violations, and we can only, I mean, it's like that seems to be the ready excuse for us to do whatever. Oh, it's for humanitarian reasons. Oh, it's weapons of mass destruction. We can't have them gassing people. Really? Well, you didn't do it when it happened here, it happened here, or happened there. So to me, this was just a facade to go in there and begin. And what was the result? Camp Bondsteel followed, and that was a major NATO base in Russia's fear. Don't quote me, but I believe Jeffrey Sachs talks about that was one of the end goals. Got to get a NATO base in there. You know, your thoughts on Sachs' point?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I would say, you know, a lot of things that I've been watching that is documentary-wise are about us saying that we're in this area, like you said, for humanitarian reasons. However, then we conveniently ignore other areas that need just as much of our humanitarian assistance. So I guess we will let some people starve to death and other people we're vaguely interested in. I'm not sure exactly how the government picks and chooses these situations, but I would say that we hide behind that a lot, that humanitarian idea. To make us look like we care. Because you know what the interesting thing about that is, philosophically speaking, and this is what I do love about our country and the people in our country, is that when people hear that other people are suffering in America, they actually do still care. That's why the government knows they can use that on us. And that
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you why they do it. It's strategic. They'll let 500,000 people die in one part of the world if there's nothing that we can gain strategically.
Correct.
The reason
Sachs' point was done
was they wanted the base. But more importantly, what people don't realize that we're pointing out here is they forced the borders. They invaded somebody's borders. They changed the borders. They said, no, this is this now, this is that now, through sheer force.
Right. And we have no right to do that. That's the thing.
Right.
I look at it from a different perspective, thinking that Russia's been patient with us. We've been being a bully and pushing our way toward into an area that we promised a while ago we weren't going to go into.
And not only that, did they change borders, they installed a military outpost. Now, what's Russia thinking when this is happening? We're getting close to the point of no return. Well, that's what they're thinking.
When are we supposed to finally start to get a little righteously angry about it?
Well, and that's what happens when you're the greatest nation on the face of the earth. Russia didn't want to go to war. So they go, okay, we'll see this. Okay, we'll see this.
Well, we'll put up with it a little bit. We'll put up with it. We'll
exactly.
see this close. We're sort of going to just, you know what I mean? But I see it from their perspective when I hear Jeffrey Sachs's explanation of it. I mean, the details that they, right, that they have been provoked.
Yes, they are. They haven't been provoked yet. They are being provoked. It's like they're poking the bear. Yes. It's kind of like, don't poke the bear. Or on the flip side, the bear putting his hand in that bee's nest trying to get the honey. You're going to provoke those bees. So, right. And of course, the U.S. being as arrogant as they are, our leadership, because they're elitist and they don't have an understanding, in my opinion, I don't want to put words in your mouth. My opinion is when people are out of touch with the real world, which is with the Nancy Pelosi's of the world, the Joe, the Boehner's of the world, the Clinton's of the world, who left that world behind and are now elitist, the Obama's of the world. Well, what happens? They're fooling themselves. Hey, they didn't do anything with Kosovo. They didn't do anything with our base here. Well, we're thinking publicly, they're saying, we're thinking Ukraine and Georgia will become members of NATO someday. Yes. And that's when NATO's like, whoa, bro.
No, that's when Russia setting up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Russia. Yeah. That's when Russia's like, whoa.
You're getting too close now. Like,
right. And what happened? Russia invaded Georgia. I remember that. And I said, Bush was just talking about defending Georgia, and we need to make sure to take care of. And boom, the tanks rolled in. And what do we do? And my take was from like, this is why you can't count on another country to defend you. To me, that's when I started realizing the U.S. put Georgia in this position. They probably behind the scenes made a lot of promises, knowing they weren't going to keep it. And there, here come the Russians. And this was a warning to NATO and to the U.S. Stop talking trash. You're being a bully, and I just slapped you, and you went running away through your inaction. You need to respect what we're doing. Did they respect that, Annette?
No, they did not. No, and then the twist of it in our media, and Jeffrey Sachs says this as well, so I'll stop saying he says this because a lot of the information I'm getting is a combination of all the things I've been listening to, his interviews, is that he says – a lot of our media about these issues, these topics, are propaganda now. They have been spun in such a way to make Russia be the aggressor. Oh, they're invading. Without talking about how, you know what I'm saying, the setup to why they invaded.
It's the old Cold War mentality. America good, Russia bad. Yeah. It's as simple as that, and the media propagates that. I watch films now. Big John made a good point. Big John's our producer in our Friday night show, and he's right. You know, maybe I'm missing a great series with that Robert De Niro on Netflix. I'm like, I'm not going to support that.
The Zero something? Yeah.
My take is, and I mean it, I'm not going to support that pig. He's a vile, evil human being. Great actor. Do not get me wrong. But I'm not hurting myself. I've watched movies from all across the world now. Because I started doing that. And I have watched some Russian cheesy sci-fi movies. Not everything I watch kind of opens my mind up.
No, you're watching all your Indian movies.
Yeah, that too. But the thing is, like, and that's a good example. So when Russians make movies, the U.S. is always a bad guy. Even to this day.
When India
makes movie, Pakistan's always the bad guy.
Okay.
There's always
a
yin for a yang here.
Right.
And my point is the media usually picks up on that.
Yeah.
They don't care about Russia. Russia bad guy. Because they've been indoctrinated and they're aligned with the elitists. See, I'm not saying Democrat, Republican, because there's both sides of the party that want war. As much as I love Trump, when you're rich, you don't have to send your kid to war. Trump got out of Vietnam, because daddy's rich.
That was to me one of the most interesting points he made. He said, this has been a long-term project.
Yep.
This is not just one administration, but it's been Bush, Obama,
Clinton first, and Bush.
Yes. I'm sorry if I said them in bad order, although he did say Biden being the worst of all of them. He ended on that. But he did say it was a much longer term project that's gone through several administrations.
And who was the ex-CIA director who was president? The first Bush. Russia was sending NATO and the U.S. a message when they rolled into Georgia.
Yep.
We're not going to allow this. Did they listen? No.
Yes.
Now, for you fools out there that don't believe, that shit don't happen in the U.S. or we're not like that. We're the good guys. Real quick, my country, Panama, was created through not only imperialism, to be created, but through this CIA type shenanigans. At the time, it was the military intelligence that the CIA eventually overtook. There was a battle. People, that's another good story, is the battle between U.S. military intelligence and the CIA for control overseas. And obviously, the military intelligence lost. But my country was created and shaped. Just as we're seeing Ukraine being shaped, my country was created and shaped that way as well throughout its history. So for people who say that does not happen here, well, I have got news for you.
And a clip.
Yes, we're going to jump to 2014 now and the Ukraine crisis. Hold on one second here, Annette. Okay, Annette, let's jump to the 2014 Ukraine crisis. We didn't get sidetracked, but just to bring in the individuals up to par. 1999, the Belgrade bombing forced the Kosovo separation, and we got Camp Bondsteel from that. And then 2008, the NATO Bucharest summit, where they said Ukraine and Georgia will eventually become NATO. Putin said, no, and invaded Georgia. And literally, that was a warning to NATO. That brings us up to 2014 and the Ukraine crisis. And that's a Euromaidan protest that toppled Ukraine's pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych, who leaned more Russia than he leaned the U.S. He was a democratically elected president. And that's what we need to stress to the people. It's like he wasn't a dictator. He may have been pro-Russia, maybe he ruled like a dictator, like some of our presidents have, but he was a duly elected president. And on a quick side note, on Bill Maher's show not long ago, they were talking about, well, what do we do when the people elect the wrong man? They're talking about Bill Maher, well, how do we fix the people's screw up? That's elitism on steroids.
I saw that as well.
And that's why I loathe Bill Maher. I'm like, you can't even entertain. He's entertaining that. How do we do it? See, Bill Maher, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, he's a 9 leftist. But people cling on to his one point. Oh, look, he's a conservative. He's been in the world. No, he's not. He's a blue-born leftist who hates Trump and lies about it, too. So, no, I'll never be where David Sachs believes it from his heart. I think Bill Maher is with a lie. But I'm digressing. See, you got me going. So, this is – I want to show you this video from Victoria Nuland. Is it Nuland or Nyland?
I think that was.
Well, either way, she's a big career diplomat who has been involved in shenanigans like this. Her and John Bolton are probably the two best known individuals whose job part of it is to go help out with coups and to change governments. Here we go.
We, of course, never choose candidates in any country.
Can you hear that?
Yep, I can.
Sorry to the audience there. Start it over.
Of course, never choose candidates in any country. But what we do in countries that proclaim to be democracies is we offer the opportunity for candidates of all kinds to learn how to put themselves forward to best effect.
Okay, she's saying they don't create candidates, they help candidates. Now, do you think that we should even be doing that? I mean, realistically, that's always going to be part of it. But do you think we should even be doing that? Shouldn't we let the people of that country choose who they want, Annette?
Yeah, no, 100%. To be promoting and to be supporting whatever their interest might be that we couldn't possibly know by not living there.
Exactly. Okay, let's go on.
Have we ever tried to meddle in other countries' elections?
Oh, probably.
We don't do that now, though. We don't mess around in other people's elections.
Well, only for a very good cause.
Can you do that?
Okay, they say it laughingly. There is no good cause. I mean, I'm wrong. There is. But who are we to choose what the good cause
is? Yes, that's right. That is so, that's hubris. The height of hubris.
Now, you can choose when it's happening to your country with our producer again. You know, I said, choose a side. You can't pretend to sit on your soapbox and say, I don't like your side happening. If George Soros people, if his people are letting criminals, rapists, murderers out and they're killing, and Elon Musk is trying to clean up the government from tax waste and abuse, keep an eye on Elon, but I'll side with him 9 out of 10 times. You know? All right.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience.
Okay, just to let the audience know, this is the phone call that everybody refers to. It's kind of hard to understand if you don't understand the context, but the coup is happening to the audience. The coup is happening while this phone call is being made. and the coup is literally happening as this phone call takes place.
Very good job.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tawny Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know.
Okay, Annette, what she's doing there is talking strategy. Got to get this guy in. This is how he builds his coalition, et cetera. Any comments on that real quick before we move on?
It's shocking.
I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
We, of course, never choose candidates in any country.
What did she just do there? She was choosing a candidate, wasn't she?
She was.
See the hypocrisy, my friends? This is why the Russia, Ukraine, and the Trump and J.D. Vance blow up is not black and white.
Well, they intercepted this call and put it out there, the Russians.
This was in 2014. 2014, as the coup was happening, as they were helping to remove a duly elected president simply because he aligned more with Russia, which is what the people wanted.
Yes, we were trying to figure out what we thought would be best, because that would be the best for our interests.
Right, and going back to the Bill Maher comment with him on his show, This is how they deal with that.
Right.
So Bill Maher can think whatever he wants.
This is
how they deal with it.
When they decide that, what if they elect the wrong leader? What is the wrong leader?
Or what did they try to do to Trump? Impeach him.
Right. Who makes that determination?
The rich elites.
That's the whole problem right there.
Election.
Okay. That's so, I know. I know you've been, I'm new. I'm fairly new to politics. I'm not new to history. I'm not new to philosophy, people. But all of these things that I've learned recently, because I've been involved in politics, that made me more interested in learning about it, it has been eye-opening. And this kind of a phone call being, you know, leaked, so we understand what's happening behind the scenes, so we know. It's like if there's a rat, you have like 50. Yeah, there's an infestation here. It's all over. This is happening.
Exactly. Okay, let's keep going.
Oh, sorry.
This is her propaganda again.
Okay. We offer the opportunity for candidates of all kinds to learn how to put themselves forward to best
That's
effect.
True,
and we always support the right of peaceful political protest in any country.
No, they do not.
That's not true.
No, they do not. So that was U.S. interference.
Yep.
And what they were negotiating, Annette, is Crimea, the President Yanukovych. And what people don't understand, there's a lot of Russia history in Donbass. I think that's what you said. Donbass and Crimea. A lot of rich. You know, Big John was telling me there's only 30%. I looked it up. I'm like, no, it's not. It's much higher than that.
Yeah. You mean the Russian?
Yeah. Now, it may be 30% at the moment, because you know what happened once the war started? All those Russians, Donbass, with the Russia. Getting out of here, you know? But my point is Crimea is pretty much heavily Russian. And so what happened? They were negotiating that. Part of the reason for the coup was so they wouldn't get Crimea. What did they do? They literally, that same year, annexed Crimea, went in there and took it by force. And then, you know, then Donbass, they backed the separatists there, all because of NATO encroaching. See, that's what people don't want to realize.
Yes.
You know, that we promised that we wouldn't do that. And here we are changing government. So at this point, Russia's had enough. You know, your thoughts on the U.S. entering this, the fact that they were negotiating to peacefully give Crimea and get something out of it. Instead, they got kind of like Colombia and Panama. The Colombians saying, we want to be our own country. The U.S. went to Colombia, said, we'll give you like $10 billion for it. The Colombia said no. Then they sent the gumbo diplomacy. Russia was negotiating, and Ukraine, instead of Colombia saying no, Ukraine was negotiating to give it back. And the U.S. came in and said no. And Russia just said, we're going to invade. There's consequences. Your thoughts on all that?
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. I'll just say I think the saddest part of all of this, William, is that I don't think, because we are so involved, because this is our proxy war, I don't think we really know what the Ukraine people want. And wouldn't it be nice if we stayed out of it enough so they could determine their fate and their future? I know some of those parts are heavily Russian. That's the language. You know what I mean? That's what I've read. And yet we've decided, again, for whatever reasons, I guess I don't know what I've never understood in reading all of it and listening is, what is our end game? Do we really want to get into a conflict with Russia? Is that really where we're going with this? Why is the United States decided that we want to be so heavily involved here at this time? Why are we poking the bear? Why are we provoking Russia? Why are we not keeping our agreements and our understandings and trying to have peace? Why don't we go for diplomacy? Why don't we try to understand what somebody else wants and make a compromise? No, but we should have diplomacy.
Russia is like China. They're not controlled by the WEF. They're not part of this global alliance. What I mean by with NATO, with the Europe, America aligned, they have a worldview. Russia's not going to play that worldview game.
It's not true. You know what Jeffrey Sachs also said in his whole talk today? He said, after 9/11, Putin came to Bush and said, I'm all in. I'm all in to help you in this battle.
No. But I'm talking about they want to consolidate. They want to destroy Russia so Russia aligns with the global view of how they see the world shaping. There's a difference between Putin coming in and saying, yes, hey, we'll help with this cause, but we are our own country. So that's what I mean. China and Russia are their own countries. And if they can break the back of Russia, if they can figure out how to install a certain type of government that favors the U.S., that will go along with everything U.S., U.K., WEF, and this sounds conspiratorial, but there's enough evidence now to show there is a reckoning coming where they want us to be one world planet. And if you look at every science fiction movie, logically, human nature, that seems to be the step to go, because the next step will be outer space and exploration.
Consolidating power. Well, listen to what Kissinger said. To be an enemy of the United States is dangerous, but to be a friend is fatal. Henry Kissinger.
Look at Noriega.
Seriously. So I love that quote. Maybe Russia doesn't. What?
But Kissinger wasn't a good guy neither, though. So, you know, there's a bit of an oxymoron there.
But it is interesting. It's not necessarily untrue. And you're right. They're going maybe for some sort of world order, some sort of consolidation of power.
Do with the conspiracy, the movies, the evil Dr. No, and this, that has more to do with a global order. Get us all on the same page. The problem is they view the small, rich, elitist, powerful as running everything, and we're just subjects to it.
That's why they're diluting our cultures.
Yes.
That is the part about immigration, because I love people. I love people, but the beauty of human beings to me is going into another culture and getting immersed in it and knowing that it's different from mine and I can learn something. But they diluted all of that. That identity that you associate with and having, like, your homeland.
They haven't diluted any culture but one culture, the American culture. They're encouraging people to come into our country, keep your culture intact, live by your beliefs, your systems, and damn American culture.
They didn't dilute France or England or Britain or England?
No, they're removing those cultures. Do you think the immigrants moving into those countries are giving up their culture?
No.
There's like over 130 Sharia courts in the UK.
Yes.
They would love to have Sharia courts here, but our Constitution forbids it. And my point is they're doing a takeover because in their minds they think they'll be able to reason with the Middle Eastern countries. But when you're 80 to 90% religion based, is it theology or theocracy? Theology based in every country, there's no logic because you're doing things based out of faith and God.
That's correct. You know? That's correct.
So this is no logic to how the outlier groups of those religions behave. And we know how they behave. Look at all the violence and that. I'm not condemning Islam. I'm condemning the people who use Islam to create terror. No different.
But,
fundamentalists. But my point is
to your point, the point that I was making off of your point, just so I can, so I don't want to lose track, because I know you had a really good question. I think what I fear in some, if their end game is some sort of global consolidation, is that we lose the beautiful things about us that make us all different. And we're also sort of, you know.
Oh, they don't care about that. They care about a lifestyle. More than, the only God they have is a God of power, the God of money, the God of greed. And that's human nature again. That's not just white people. It's not just
I agree. It could be anybody.
The Shah, not the Shah, the Ayatollah in Iran is supposedly worth $2 billion. Go figure. All right, so let's keep going here. So what happened is, obviously, this escalated in 2014. They took Crimea. NATO then ramped up military exercises near Russia. And then Ukraine's constitution in 2019 enshrined NATO membership as a goal. That was it for Russia. Russia amassed troops near Ukraine 2021, demanded NATO hall expansion. The U.S. rejected it. Blinken was he's a vile human being, rejected it. And Sachs' point is that the West's refusal to negotiate Russia's security concerns, e.g. NATO and Ukraine, that left Putin with a no choice. You know, well, if you're not going to honor our borders, as you said you were, we're going to take it out. And they didn't expect that to happen. It's one thing, Georgia, a little country, is that where you may face the might of the U.S. Well, at the end of the day, you need to learn your history. Now, Big John said, hey, there's about 2,000 years of history. And I said, yeah, but we're just going to talk about the 90s, and that's all we need to talk about. But let me make this about the 2,000 years of Russian history. Many, many empires have tried to subjugate the Russians to failure. The most recent, obviously, being Hitler and the Germans. Those Russian winters are tough, are brutal. During war, the French tried it before the Germans.
With Napoleon. Yep.
Yeah. So the U.S. completely miscalculated. And then obviously in 2022, the invasion, February 24, 2022, Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. He aimed to demilitarize Ukraine. And Sachs' point is that Russia believed they had to invade forcefully to stop the expansion, meaning they were putting their foot down. And I agree with Sachs. I thought this was a predictable outcome.
Yes.
You have provocations, Belgrade, yes. Ukraine's, and that shift, they left Moscow convinced diplomacy was futile and military action its only leverage. And it's a situation in which Russia had had enough. Now, let's get to why we say that. Let's talk about what we talked about earlier, the Soviet missiles in Cuba versus NATO in Ukraine. So in 1962, for those of you, they may not be teaching this anymore.
The Cuban missile crisis, with Kennedy.
Yeah, 1962, we weren't even sperm or eggs yet. This is even before our time.
Not that old.
What's that?
Not that old.
Yeah, exactly. So the Soviet nuclear missiles were going to be put in Cuba, 90 miles from the U.S., and it sparked the 1962 missile crisis at the height of the Cold War. Americans thought we were going to go to war with Russia. The United States risked World War III. Get them out or there will be war. And the Ukraine for Sachs, if Russia put bases in Mexico, we'd go ballistic. This is Sachs' point. Why expect them to accept NATO in Ukraine? That's what he said on Piers Morgan.
Yes.
NATO arming of Ukraine mirrors Cuba's threat to Russia. Now, a key difference, which I don't buy, Cuba was nuclear and immediate. Ukraine's conventional, but it builds over time. And here's the thing, too. They can sneak a nuclear armament. They can set up a nuclear fashion to be able to launch. And we wouldn't know Russia wouldn't know better. Or maybe if they could, it'd be too late. They're there anyway. What are you going to do? And that's what they're trying to avoid. So imagine, how do you think the Americans would react if China put missiles in Mexico?
Oh, it would. I honestly can't even imagine it. There would be such an outrage. People would be terrified. We wouldn't have it. We wouldn't be having it. Period.
We'd never tolerate it.
No.
So why do you expect Russia to tolerate putting NATO on their back?
This is part of our problem with diplomacy. It's putting yourself in, even if you consider them the enemy, putting yourself in their shoes. Of course not. And it had already gone on for such a long over time. There was a buildup, right? He had sort of been pushed, and he was kind of, I don't like it, but whatever. And then he got to the point where it was the breaking point.
Exactly. And that, in a nutshell, is what David Sacks says. And yes, it's not based off of hypotheses. It's not based off of theory. And that's why I believe him here. It's academic study as it should be. Not theory, but actual facts and watching it play out. Not twisting anything, looking at the data, the historical context, and going, holy mackerel, here's the answer. You know, it's like 1 + 1 does equal 2 in this case. Whereas my issue with academics, it's always 1 + x + 1 + y + x, and then they fill it in and go, this is what happened.
Like, no, even the documents you said, as you said earlier, that have been declassified, there are documents to look at, there are archives to look at. There's a lot of evidence for what we're talking about. So it's not just Jeffrey Sachs says so, or, you know what I mean, Victor Davis Hanson says, so, you know what I'm saying? They are backing it up with conversations, and I think there was even a conversation he mentioned with Gorbachev that he said, hey, if you don't believe me, you can find this. This is how you look at
the reunification.
Yes.
There were two points. One was a reunification when East and West Germany were going to unify. Gorbachev saw the writing on the wall, so he was trying to get the best deal. Hey, buddy, don't worry about it. Hey, you know, we're not going to, hey, by the way, hey, here's a napkin for that little mark on your head. People don't know Gorbachev had a birthmark.
Wait, yes, he did, but he was, as Jeffrey Sachs said, maybe the greatest statesman of our time.
He tried. It's who you talk to. To the Russian people, he was one of the greatest betrayers in Russian history. You know, why? The Soviet Union fell on his watch. He gave up a lot. You know, see, so that's always going to be interpreted by
history's interpretation, for sure. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And then there was, previous to that, there was an unwritten belief from Roosevelt to Stalin that your lands are your lands. We're not going to see. We're not going to push it through. And it kind of worked out because Europe was completely war-torn, and they couldn't do anything anyway. You know, because one of the options that Stalin was worried about, they got the nuclear bomb. What's to keep them from coming after us next?
Right.
There were some generals who were like, we need to go after Russia next.
I think that Patton might have been one of them.
I want to say Patton. I want to say MacArthur, but I don't know MacArthur.
Maybe it was MacArthur.
I know he wanted to bomb China for Korea. But that said, there's always those type of generals. So,
yes.
So the history's there, people. You know, if you get a chance, check out David or Jeffrey Sachs' videos. You can find them on YouTube. You can find them probably at Columbia, etc. So let's move on to the next phase of this,
okay,
the Ukraine. So I want to put up this image here of the Ukraine before the war and Ukraine after the war to showcase Victoria Nuland's propaganda-style machine. Can you see that?
Yep.
So this is before the Ukraine crisis. The Guardian, welcome to Ukraine, the most corrupt nation in Europe. After, once Russia invaded, the fight for Ukraine is a fight for liberal ideals. That's just propaganda. Reuters, before the crisis, Ukraine's neo-Nazi problem. After the war started, for foreign fighters, Ukraine offers purpose, camaraderie, and a cause. Vox, a Ukrainian comedian turned president is embroiled in Trump's impeachment mess. CNN, once it started, Ukrainians are giving two lessons in democracy that Americans have forgotten. That's a complete and utter lie, and we're going to talk about and prove it. New Europe, Ukrainian president's rule becomes increasingly corrupt and authoritarian. The Washington Post, Zelensky, the TV president turned war hero. There's no denying the complete change in propaganda.
You
go for the truth because they're a non-player. They're not significant. There's no basis not to report the truth. There's no reason. Once the war started, every one of those newspapers had that Ukrainian flag flying on their social media platforms. Volodymyr Zelensky, we just showed you how the media looked at Ukraine before and after. So let's look at what Volodymyr Zelensky has done. He's jailed men of God. signed law 8371 that banned Moscow-linked Ukrainian Orthodox Church in August of 2024. There was a priest that was arrested in April of 2023, a year earlier, charged with subversion for pro-Russia sermons, and they were jailed. That's not a country. Let me ask you this. How does America look back at the jailing of Chinese in internment camps here?
You mean the Japanese?
Yes.
In World War II?
Yes, in Japanese, yes.
No, I think they think of it as a very regrettable time in history.
So why would anybody support this jailing of people of Russian descent, Russian priests? You know, that's not a good country. That's a dictator. Just because you are under martial law, there are no elections, it does not say you are hereby elected as dictator. So he did that. Not only that, so there were 412 churches seized by January 31 of 2025 per Ukraine's security service. There have been reports of torture as well. They banned books. Who banned books in before a world war?
Hitler. Germany, right?
Yeah. They decreed Russian language books, films, music illegal. 12,000 books burned.
I mean, would you say, William, that in not such an overt way or not such an obvious way, that's sort of some of what's been happening in the United States? And also, what about the people that were in prison after the, I guess, coup? I mean, is that sort of the same
thing? Exact same thing. They made up crap about the J6ers to get him in jail. They gave him longer sentences than normal. This is corruption. This is why Trump was elected. And if we had actual chain of custody and voter ID, I think he would have won in a landslide. I think some of these blue states that Kamala Harris won days later, after a wink, wink, those mail-in ballots were counted, would have gone Trump's way. So, yes, this is a similar situation. When the elites start to decide what is best for you, sometimes I wonder if we're better off dead, because the misery that's going to endure, are we truly living?
In a sense with Zelensky, though, I mean, Trump made a good point in his office. He's like, I've empowered you to be a tough guy, but you really wouldn't be a tough guy without us. I mean,
he's talking about having the being able to hold Russia off. We're talking about how Zelensky's treating his people.
I agree. Does he have the backing of his country to be doing these things?
We don't know. We don't know, because he has taken over the media. We'll talk about that here in a few. But he also sanctioned the former president, Petro Poroshenko, this past January. Froze his assets and sidelined him from political opposition. He doesn't want anybody.
Right. He likes his position of power.
Yeah.
He likes that.
There was a dissident death. He jailed a Chilean-American blogger. Where's the U.S. about our guy? That's our guy. Jailed him. He died in jail because of pneumonia after untreated fever. Ukraine's justice ministry said it was a legal detention. Maybe so, but the odds of them torturing him, mistreating him, and letting him die, that's not.
Yeah.
So I want to show this video here. And let's see. Okay, so Annette, before I play this video, there are dozens upon dozens. This one has 12 spots there. Pick one. But I want people, if you want, look at the one in the top right here.
Okay.
They knocked the guy out. Right below it, they punched the kid. This is the Ukrainian ministry of whatever their army ministry is, rounding people up to forcefully conscript them in the military. Here's what people don't know. All the rich Ukrainians fled to Poland or Romania, and they're living large, living the high life, buying up housing, creating their own issues over there. There's a housing shortage now, I want to say. But that said, they fled. These are the ones that didn't have the money to flee that are stuck. Their men are dying. This is what they're doing. So I'm going to play this right for just a few seconds. But just the top right one and the one below it. But pick any one you want, and you can see people. You can see men running for their lives. Okay, see this one up here on top left? See the guy beating the poor Ukrainian? This right here, right here on the part right. See him? He just hit the guy in the top right. Look at him. Knocked him out of the ground.
Oh.
Right below him. See how he's hitting? That's a kid there. That's a kid there at the bottom right there. Now look at this one back up to the top right. Watch. They're just dragging him. They're just dragging him into the van. That is what the people are. See this one over here?
No.
Look at the bottom right. Watch the bottom right. You're going to see him. Oh, hold on. See if they're running. They're running. They're running from being conscripted. You see this one over here? Right here?
In the middle?
The bottom middle. See the cops? They're shoving and pushing them in there. They are literally kidnapping these people from their families. I didn't show it. There's one where the mother, she's just hitting the guy. You and just cursing at him because they took her son in front of her. This is the so-called Ukrainian fight for liberal ideals. This is the Ukrainian offers purpose, camaraderie, and a cause. This is Ukrainians are giving lessons in democracy that Americans have forgotten. Zelensky, the TV president turned war hero. Are those the acts of anything of what I just said that the media is saying Zelensky is? No. None of that is. So there's illegal roundups. It's legal. That is legal for them to do that.
Really?
The draft age is 25 to 60. What's illegal is if they're out of that range, but they don't care at this point.
The draft age is what?
25 to 60. Martial law. Yeah.
What?
Well, that's what happens. That's what happens when you start running out of men. So martial law order 112 allowed 5,300 forced recruits by December 2024. This is per Kiev Post leaks. Not the government saying this, leaks. So over 5,300 men have literally been kidnapped and taken to the front lines.
You're
torturing the prisoners. Ukrainian, this one will get you, America. Ukrainians, and we're not pro-Putin here. You need to understand that. We're just trying to tell you both sides of the story here.
Yep.
Ukrainian soldiers are filmed torturing Russian POWs. A Bucha soldier cuts captive's finger. There's a mock execution to scare the guy.
Tell me this, I can't sleep tonight, William.
Now here's what the great president turned war hero. This is the Ukrainian teaching us liberal ideals. This is Ukrainians giving us lessons in democracy that we've forgotten. Zelensky said it was war stress, torturing Russian soldiers. War stress. Now, for those of y'all who say the Russians deserve it, well, everything we just said as to why the Russians invaded. We're not justifying the invasion, but we're saying there was a coup that was allowed that led up to all this. If you're saying it's okay for the Ukrainians to torture the Russians, then don't bitch to me about the Russians torturing the Ukrainians. All torture is wrong.
It's an all spirit of war.
It is. All is fair in war in a gross way. But at the end of the day, my issue is they're propping the Ukrainians.
That's
and
correct.
Zelensky as a fight for liberal ideals. He's giving us lessons in democracy.
Right. And like you said, good guy, bad guy. That's how they've characterized it.
Exactly. No ceasefire. They rejected Trump's initial peace plan in December. Because he demanded a full Russian exit. That's not how peace plans work. You know, at the end of the day, we pull our money out, Ukraine falls within weeks. Maybe
for
not
sure.
Weeks because they have the military equipment, but they will fall quickly because they don't have the bullets to refill.
Right.
And they don't control the air skies, and the drone support would be gone. All that will be gone. You know, now, Zelensky himself, pre-war, he was worth $1.5 million. Since the war started, these are alleged, but excuse me, his estimates, he's worth $50 million. There are claims that he has a $20 million Florida mansion bought via Panama Shell Company. There's a claim that he has $15 million in Cyprus banks. Now, they did find a couple million of our money off one of his cronies trying to escape and flee Ukraine. $150 billion in USA since 2022 with over a billion missing. Some reports say there could be up to $50 billion. Now, I will add to this. and I said this in another podcast, you remember Live Aid, the big concert, or
yes,
all the famous
people. Bob Geldof.
Bob Geldof. And it raised, I don't want to say hundreds, it was in the 80s, it was the 90s, I think, but probably hundreds of millions. They were all stunned to find out 70% of the goods and everything bought with all that money being sent to Africa to help the starving kids, 70% of it was missing. It all wound up in the black market. Because of the process. I've seen that process firsthand, working as a volunteer overseas, you know, being the grunt, helping lug things off. You know, well, who are you taking it to? These people. Then you see all these hoodlums over there taking it up right afterwards. You know, it's more than 1 billion. I'll tell you that is my point. So there's an audit coming. The Trump is pushing for a full audit. Zelensky cannot afford that, you know. So there's 100 billion supposedly in question. The point is, nobody can knows where all the money is, and they're thinking, and it always happens, human nature, they skim off the top.
Our very own people in Congress.
Exactly.
It's the same idea. It's the exact same idea. They come in with one, not maybe middle class, upper middle class, as you said, and all of a sudden they leave as bazillionaires.
Exactly. So now let's look at what Reuters said.
Reuters.
Ukraine's neo-Nazi problem.
Okay.
That's what they said. The Aryan faction, the Azov Battalion, that's true. They do exist. Over 1,200 neo-Nazis, swastikas, SS symbols. People forget Ukrainians were fighting on the side of Germany during World War II. They were not fighting with allies. Okay, so this was founded on May 5th, 2014, and they're a powerful group. Zelensky awarded the Hero of Ukraine to Commander Denis Prokopenko in 2023. He's part of that faction. No disbandment despite 2024 petitions with over 50,000 signatures. They still exist. And you can see the video of them on X. And here's the kicker. We see all these black congressmen and the couple of senators got to support Ukraine. Yeah, you're supporting neo-Nazism. Is what you're supporting as well.
So that, and, you know, you're saying you're sure of that. Because I always wondered about that.
No, that's documented fact.
You know what? So don't you find that, William, don't you find that a little bit ironic?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. All these black congressmen and congresswomen who are Democrats or that, or Hakeem Jeffries, we got to support Ukraine.
And wearing the flags and, right?
It's called propaganda. It's propaganda, meaning the media is not going to report it. Look what I said, Ukraine's neo-Nazi problem, Reuters. Reuters after the war for foreign fighters. Ukraine's neo-Nazi problem. Reuters after the war for foreign fighters. Ukraine offers purpose.
But I'm just trying to ask you. You and I are both trying to be critical of sourcing. You trust this is accurate. You trust.
Yeah, there's been too much information, not enough pushback, not enough denial. Just your arrogant, ignorant American. That shit ain't true. Only because it's so unbelievable, they can't fathom the thought that it is true.
Well, it's interesting. So, Ukraine is not talked about a lot that I know of in World War II. I didn't even know, to be honest with you, what side they were on. I know the Russians were on the side of the Allies. You know what I mean? So I assumed Ukraine was as well.
Well, here's the kicker.
You know, I didn't know that.
It's true. People can't even tell you where Ukraine is on the map.
Are you pulling a map up? I do know where it is on a map now. I didn't before, though, to be honest with you. But William, at the time of World War II, are you sure that Ukraine wasn't fighting with
the Allies? Oh, you mean with the Nazis? Well, for sure, it has been documented. In World War II, there were some Ukrainian groups that collaborated with Nazi Germany.
Interesting.
It was the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists.
And then
it had its own military wing, the Ukrainian Insurgent Army. And they initially aligned with the Nazis. The point is the seeds of neo-Nazism have been there since World War II. You know?
Yeah,
that is
fascinating. I'm learning right along with our audience. I mean, that is...
Well, everybody knows of the Azov Brigade, and that was originally a volunteer militia, but there is also the S-14. and they've been linked to neo-Nazi ideologies. Look, all countries have these groups. We have them here in America.
Sure. Yeah,
they're
we do.
Inconsequential here in America. There, the Azov Brigade has created its own power base.
Got
And Zelensky has to abide by what they want to keep them aligned and in place. So he's working out deals with them. So let's keep moving on. Those are, and my point isn't to disparage Ukraine people. My point is to show you the truth about Zelensky and what it's like. He does not toot unicorn toots. You know,
right.
He is no better than any other dictator. Once martial law was implemented, power corrupts. Now let's talk about why we had a blow up. Why he's so insistent.
Okay, you mean why he had a blow up in the Oval Office? Yeah, that was fascinating to watch.
Wasn't it? So let's talk Victor Davis Hanson and David Sacks.
Okay.
Victor David Hanson, he's at the Hoover Institute. He tends to lean more conservative. He's like Jeffrey Sachs, just another different one. David Sachs is like a billionaire, but he's an intellectual too.
Victor Davis Hanson is more conservative than Jeffrey Sachs, I'd say, for sure.
There's not even debate on that. So, Victor David Hanson, his critique is strategic overreach. He warns that Zelensky's defiance, that actually reflects a broader Western delusion of limitless power, meaning there was a time where we thought we could keep this going on forever. And Zelensky bought into that, and that's now what he completely believes. And they're ignoring historical lessons of proxy wars. This is from Victor Davis Hanson.
Yes.
Again, the 62 Cuban crisis and Zelensky's misjudging the U.S. willingness to risk nuclear escalation over a proxy showdown. And that misjudgment is he wants U.S. troops. He wants to get into NATO. He thinks that won't trigger a war. That could very well trigger a war.
Look, yes.
If Russia thinks that they're going to go down or their days are numbered, they're going to do everything to get.
What have they got to lose at that point? Exactly.
Well, here's the danger. We always talk about terrorist groups being funded by Iran. Well, what's to keep Russia from starting to take hits out, taking our presidents out, taking important people out, taking oligarchs that aren't favorable to them out? Russia will not hesitate. Russia will not hesitate to give a dirty bomb to a terrorist group, as long as they knew it would go in Chicago. It would be in New York. Once that line is crossed, we would be the ones suffering because we would be the last ones because we know what nuclear annihilation would do. But when you push a country who has nuclear power, they may think we can push back. We do it the smart way in their mind, right around. But Zelensky doesn't want to understand that. You know, then there's power preservation. Zelensky relies on martial law to suspend elections.
Right.
Opposition parties.
Power,
the media.
Yes.
Habeas corpus. He wants to stay in power. See, contrary to USA polling, you know, meaning he controls the media. So any poll is going to be favorable to him because he controls all the powers that create the polls. I believe this is a big reason he doesn't necessarily want peace. He's in love with power. He doesn't want the war to end. He just wants it to keep going.
I totally agree with you. Do you know I watched that interaction in the Oval Office again, trying to understand from his point of view? And I thought to myself, he just doesn't want to lose his position.
Exactly.
He still wants to have all the money coming in. He still wants to be in that power. Go ahead. Well, what I thought was interesting was, you said it just a second ago because you talked about nuclear weapons, and Trump said it twice, I think. You're messing with World War III.
Yes.
You're messing with World War III. I mean, that's what's at stake here. Do you want your kids, do you want your boys to keep dying? We're trying to offer you a way that you're going to have some cards and you're going to be able to do something about this. And I'm trying to get the bloodshed to stop. I mean, that to me, if I'm a leader and I care about my people.
He doesn't. He doesn't. Look at the conscription. They're gathering people up like that while he's posing for Vogue, while he's walking down these other countries' versions of Rodeo Drive, Fifth Avenue. While he's doing all that, he's kidnapping people through sheer force against their will. So no. And
that's why I think Jeffrey Sachs is out there and getting all this media exposure more than I've ever seen him, because he's saying, look at our part in this.
But Piers Morgan and others, Democrats, Republicans, Jeffrey Sachs and Trump advance are the only ones who want to see it that way, want to see the truth. So now the whole point, though, here is, despite the polls, many believe he would lose in an open election, in a new election.
Yeah, I think he would, too. I think we don't know right now what those people are thinking, where they're at, how they feel.
See, that's what I'm talking about. I come from a suppressed country where I wasn't personally suppressed, but I saw the fear. And deep down within that fear, there's that spark of nothing but unconditional hate towards the people doing this. And by continuing war, by not wanting to seek peace, the ones who are in the trenches, the ones who are affected, and whether it's economically or on the front lines, they're looking at it, I'm a proud Ukrainian. I don't want to give up, but I don't want war anymore. I want a solution out of this. And he's not even offering
them one. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, then there's the corruption incentives. War sustains the corrupt elite via Western aid. The money he keeps getting. He went to Europe after Trump kicked him out, saying, look, if the U.S. isn't going to help us, we need $200 billion from you guys. Give us the Russians' money that you guys are holding in check. He's not even asking, trying to negotiate. It's like, give it to us. You know, it's not your money. And there will be ramifications for that down the road. Russia will never forget. Europe, you're going to still need gas and oil from them once this is over. And those prices may not be as low as they have been because they want their money back. You guys have held in check.
Do you think what happened is that in the White House that day, Zelensky got a little bit of a reality check? You know,
Exactly what happened. Trump does not want war. He's not a saint. He may want this peace for his own legacy. I don't care as long as we get peace. If you want to bring your legacy, brother, we are. See, there's sometimes you can be aligned with a person you don't agree with because you want the same end goal. That's why sometimes Democrats and Republicans will work together. So if aid stops, so does the gravy train. And then more importantly, auditing begins. And that could be disastrous for Zelensky's inner circle. Then there's the ultra-nationalist threat. Most Ukrainians want peace. There's a violent, well-armed ultra-nationalist minority that opposes territorial concessions. Think the Azov Battalion. A very small, powerful neo-Nazi battalion that holds a lot of sway. They're like, we're not going to stop fighting. So then they become your enemy as well as the Russians' enemy for peace, you know? And that can pose a credible threat to Zelensky. Let's take Zelensky out and they're going to hope because they're dumb. They don't think things through. Let's just take Zelensky out because he's for peace now, you know? So he may not want to deal with that. And then there's this psychological commitment. Time reports Zelensky's immovable messianic belief in victory and that he has been labeled delusional by AIDS. I remember reading this a while back, and it blinds him to Ukraine's actual dire situation. And in essence, what they were saying is, we're not winning, but you can't tell him that. So he's just continuing the escalation because in his mind at this point, he's, we can win. You know, it's like, no, Zelensky, Voldemort. This isn't a buzzer beater final shot and you win. The only way that happens is with a nuke dropped in Moscow, and that ain't going to happen. You know?
Yeah. You think there could really be an argument for some sort of delusion there?
Oh my God, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Delusion happens when you surround yourself by yes people, and Zelensky is surrounding himself by yes people. It worse when you have Republicans and Democrats who want the world to keep going. Coaching you, this is how you handle Trump. You turn down that deal, you demand this, and this, and he'll give it to you. Trump was like, F you. Trump was like, Trump is a bully, but in this moment, we needed that bully. Yeah. Where Biden would have been.
He was actually patient to start, you know? To start. I thought he was being patient.
Well, because that's how that works. Trump knows how it works, you know? But the problem with that, Annette, is he tried to use that Oval Office conference there to push for support through the media and then to get Trump to demonize and condemn Putin. Trump's the arbiter. I know you don't like Putin, Zelensky. Putin doesn't like you. For every atrocity you show us, he can show us atrocities you've done. But he invaded. but you're the one who pushed for the invasion because you kept demanding Ukraine because you were too ignorant to understand how politics works. And when a country feels their backs are against the wall, they will act just as we acted after we were attacked by terrorists and invaded Afghanistan, invaded Iraq. When you push a country to attack, they will respond. And that's what happened here. So don't give me that nonsense. Mm-hmm. All right. Then there's the historical legacy. I believe this is one too. You know, he rejected the 2022 Istanbul Accords, which was neutrality for full territory. Everything would have gotten the same. Just be neutral. You do not become NATO. You put that in the country. Whatnot. And you get your country back.
Yep.
Nope. I am Voldemort! Hear my wand from Harry Potter. That's literally what he was thinking. You know?
Fatal flaw. Yep.
Oh my gosh. So now the only offer is the worst deal. That's why he's so angry. No, they got to go back all the way. They're not going back all the way. It's like the 66 war with Israel, with six nations invading Israel. We just kicked your ass. There's a scene in Aliens, the sequel to Alien, the movie. Yeah. And John Paxton, great actor, rest in peace. You know, they just got literally killed, whacked by the aliens. And there's Sigourney Weaver's character planning. We got to do this. We got to do this. He's like, I got news for you. We just got our asses kicked, man. You know, it's like Zelensky is Sigourney Weaver's character at that moment, not realizing we just got our asses kicked. We can't do anything. And he thought they could do something. Now, in Sigourney Weaver's case, of course, the good guys won and she defeated the aliens. But what is that? And that's a freaking movie. That's fake. Yeah, it's not real. So now he's got a worse deal. You got 1.5 million casualties, territorial losses, and that's going to be his legacy, the man who lost Ukraine.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's misreading the Western support. Zelensky assumes alignment with Western globalists, Obama, Clinton, Biden, Farmer, Macron, and that mocks U.S. And he's mocking the U.S. at times. And he's ignoring Trump's Russia reset. Hold on one second here, Annette.
No problem. He didn't want.
Okay, Annette. So he's banking on Western globalists, and I mentioned UK, Macron, France, Germany. All these. We're with you, Finland. And you know what makes this even worse? On the side note, after he left the Oval Office, like about over a dozen, maybe a couple dozen countries, we support Ukraine. They all said the exact same verbiage. Word for word. And it was so obvious. It was like either a PR company that set it up for them or somebody. But it was obvious it was not organic. You combine that with what the Democrats and Republicans who coached him told him how to treat Trump, say no to the minerals deal. You can get more of this, more of that. They just wanted more war. So now the Europeans are talking about, now he's going to the Europeans. You got to help me. You got to help me. I want to show this map. Look at this map. This is what I call an ugly truth. Can you see that map?
Yeah.
NATO member state spending as percentage of combined spending. You see that big, massive blue Pac-Man image?
Yes, I do.
That is the United States spending in terms of percentage of combined spending. We fund 71% of NATO. At the end of the day, all those nations combined, UK 5.4%, France 4.7%. So right there that's 15%. The next closest nation that we have given anywhere from $100 billion documented we know of to what Trump says, $350 billion. And, you know, nobody's arguing with Trump. That's not true, Mr. President. I haven't seen one person say, that's not true. So maybe we have. The next closest country is Germany with $12 billion. They don't have – the standing army is like 120 or 170 or something in Britain, 150. They got like less than 500,000 standing troops in all Europe combined. A study came out that's saying, look, those 10,000 troops that Keir Starmer has promised, we can't even fund those guys long term. Now, Keir Starmer is talking about sending troops, boots on the ground. Your boys will die. That's going to create – you're going to be out of government so fast you won't know what hit you. The elitists are so out of touch. So there's – he has no realistic vision here, Zelensky, and how he can win this. So, because if Europe gets into this fray, and let's say they take it even a step further, we got to defend ourselves.
So he's got no realistic vision for how he can end this. I agree with you. So why did
there's
he double
no
down?
There's no path to victory. You know so how they say in politics? No path to victory.
So why did he double down in the Oval Office?
Because he's, remember, he's delusional. So for Europe to even begin to do what they need to do, they're going to have to start fracking. They're going to have to increase their spending on defense by about 5%. They're going to have to cut welfare. And they're going to have to wean themselves off of us.
Well, that's what that was a really great, another succinct point that Jeffrey Sachs made. And it was, okay, Europe, time to develop a foreign policy. And not one that is reliant upon the United States. Get your own.
Right. And you think he can wait 4 years or wait for Trump to get impeached again? No. Russia's not going to stop. From Russia's point of view, there have been reports of 150 to 800,000 Russian lives killed. We don't know. Nobody actually knows what those numbers are. I truly believe Russia has picked its spots in these various areas, and they're just waiting it out. They're going to run out of money. They're going to run out of weapons. They're going to run out of men. And they've got to calculate what's going to happen first. Well, they're running out of men. If they don't have men to fight, Russia's just waiting and waiting. We don't know how many people Russia has lost. Here's the problem with Western analysts.
Mm-hmm.
Korea. It's going to be quick. We go in there, it's a done deal.
Boom.
Right. That sure didn't work out. Vietnam. Done deal. Sending the troops. Be a done deal.
Yep.
Afghanistan. We're there for 6 months tops. You know, year
longest
tops.
War.
That. Yes. 20 years later. These analysts. Oh, Russia's expecting to go in there and be done in 3 weeks. No. I expected this was going to be a trench war, meaning I'm like, they're going to go in there, they're going to set in, and this will be a little bit back and forth. Russia's going to be happy taking little chunks here and there because Ukraine can't match the man for man or power for power. The only reason, you know, Ukraine's actually the most heavily armed nation in Europe now outside of Russia because of all the money we've given them.
United States.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So, and a lot of their weapons are being sold on the black market because we don't know where it's going. They're winding up on the black market. The CIA and intel agencies track this. By the way, for you all out there, who took over Afghanistan? Oh, my God, I'm trying to a brain blank here. The terrorists who run Afghanistan now.
The Taliban?
Taliban. They're the number two seller of arms on the market behind the U.S. Why? Because everything Joe Biden left there. The Ukrainian black market's doing the same thing. You know? So my point is I think the Russians are waiting it out. The moment they see weakness, the moment the U.S. pulls out, the Russians may go, we want peace, but y'all aren't giving us peace, so we got to continue on. And if Trump goes, I'm not giving y'all any money, he's doing it to prove a point. Because the moment the Russia starts to gain more, what is going to likely happen, Russia will push in farther. We're not helping him out. Ukraine's going to be begging for peace. Starmer, Macron, we need a peace. And then Trump will negotiate Russia to pull back to what they control right now.
Right.
That's what
I think
is going to happen. So Russia's still going to gain land, but they'll get back the land they encroach on once we stop funding them, once they start realizing there's no more. So Russia has a plan in place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what a shame, though, because it could have been achieved, the exact scenario you described, a long time ago.
Oh, they could have gotten all their territory back in 2022.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a shame.
But Zelensky.
He wouldn't have been as enriched.
Yeah, true, but maybe he was counting on his dance skills to get Russia to
– his comedic skills? Wasn't he a comedian?
Yeah. Well, not only that, a lot of money that these European countries have spent on their military is showing them how to be equity. Now they know how to dance. It's a joke. The European military is a joke. So there's been plenty of diplomatic missteps. The Oval Office outburst, obviously. He naively thinking Trump was going to be as compliant as Biden. Settled issues, Ukraine will not join NATO or retake the Donbas Crimea area. Those are gone, and he's struggling to understand that. Even Europe thinks, well, maybe we can work something out. No, they're not. It's like the Six-Day War when Israel took certain lands. They go, no, we're not going to give these back because y'all use these back doors to invade us. We're going to control them.
Okay, so you just gave a great analysis, and I know we're coming up on the end, so I want to ask you, if you're Zelensky right now, what do you do to save face? You got to come back in. You got to come back into the United States and negotiate.
I get a peace plan that makes me 100% immune to anything that is discovered after peace, meaning they do audits. The people can't put him up on trial. And he goes off to live in the Swiss Alps in a nice villa until some Ukrainian recognizes him and kills him.
So he has to relinquish his power then and just go live his life.
He's not going to have a choice because my final take is domestic risk post-peace, and that's a repeat of what we said earlier. A ceasefire might force elections,
right,
and he'd likely lose.
Yeah. Yes, correct.
And then you combine that with these people who, and this is just a talking point for us. How many Ukrainians are crying in their church, in their homes, and they're thinking, we could have had a peace deal in 2022? And avoid it, and my son would be alive.
All this suffering, exactly.
Exactly.
All this senseless, needless suffering.
And the successor government looking to score brownie points with the U.S. Hey, help us. Well, what do you got to give us? We won't have all the corruption. Here's where the corruption is. Here are the people we can go get. Hey, I recognize that name. Voldemort Zelensky at the top of the list. Yeah, I loathe him. This guy has sending people to war to die, kidnapping them, and he's living the high life, traveling, being treated like a rock star. You know, his whole not wearing a suit, that went from May for whatever reason to now it's a shtick. Oh, I'm Voldemort. I don't need no suit. Any final words before I close this out of that?
No, I've enjoyed this in-depth discussion, and you actually always give me more information than I had before. You know, that was a really great timeline, but I think we both agree that we can't look at this situation and not see the United States has had their hand in it.
Exactly. Just tell that to my wife. He learns something from me every day.
I do. Like, I always do learn something from you. I'm a student here as well. I mean, I'm obviously a conservative, but what I'm interested in is what you're interested in is also is like uncovering the truth as best as we can get to it, which I know is not an easy thing to achieve.
My lesson to everybody out there is do not look at ideology during war or during any scenario. Look at human nature, and you're going to go, oh, you're right. Oh, you're right. You're right. Not me being right, but when they start looking at things, oh, I see it. Oh, he did that. Human nature is what – it crosses ideology. It crosses culture. It crosses religion.
Tradition,
everything. Because it's who we are at our core as survivalists, as greedy people, as people who are willing to sacrifice. We're all made up differently, but there's certain traits that can be predicted. You know, so I guess at the end, we're done here. It's the ugly truth. Uncle Ben. Oh, I'm sorry, Uncle Ben. I'm thinking Rice. Not Rice. Uncle Sam. I want you. Uncle Bear, Zelensky, cash the checks, and now Ukraine's a meat grinder with no off switch. Jeffrey Sachs, he has showed us for decades a trail of broken promises, NATO overreach. He showed us, and we showed you Zelensky, Annette and I actually showed you, that was our own research, showed you Zelensky's dark side, jailing priests, burning books, pocketing what could be billions. He's no saint. Hansen, Victor Davis Hansen, and David Sachs, they nailed it. He's trapped, he's clinging the power. He wants U.S. handouts, and he's betting on a victory in that ain't coming. And us, we're stuck footing the bill for a proxy war we lit the fuse on. It's time to wake up, conservatives. It's time to cut the cord, audit the cash, and let Ukraine face reality. Any final words in that before we close the show out?
Nope. We're good.
All right, my friends. Before I go, do not forget to catch this show fired up. And Fired Up California, as well as my other podcast, Red, White, and Rude, and Points on the Board, that is pop culture and sports. And Annette has been featured on our big questions. She's got a great interview. She's our regular Friday night panelist, and we'll be testing this week her own podcast. So stay on the lookout for that. Exactly. I am William Del Pilar for Annette Ross. And signing off, stay fired up, my friends, and we'll see you next time.